Hello, everyone. I just want to welcome you to another podcast for Get Minted, where we inspire individuals 45 and above to take control of their lives through health and fitness so they can have that opportunity to lead that inspired life that we all want to lead. My name is Andrew. And for this week, we actually have Stephanie Figuera, who is a holistic nutritionist. We're going to talk a little bit about the importance of nutrition, how that could actually help us and impact us as we get older, and touch on a couple of things in terms of menopause, food's effect on menopause, as well as IBS. So welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Stephanie, so let's maybe we can start off just a little bit more about you. What's how did you get into the nutritional side of things?
Yeah. Well, I've always had a passion for food and understanding where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. However, it was in 2009 that I went back to school. It was after 2009. My dad was diagnosed with colon cancer, a reoccurrence of colon cancer that had spread to his stomach and all over, which led to surgeries and treatments and then trying to figure out how to feed him afterwards. And so I got back into food at that time, trying just to help him be the most nourished that he could be when he was going through these challenges. And once he passed, with the encouragement of my college roommate and my husband and family, I went back to school for nutrition. Okay. It's actually something I thought about doing when I was in college, switching majors and going that route. And of course, didn't. Sure. But now here I am, following my love and passion.
There you go.
For the last 10 plus years. So really, I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
Of course, and I think what we don't realize is that there's so much importance when it comes to nutritional factor, just food in general. Food has changed so much over the years. Mm-hmm. And there are so many concepts out there, and there's basically understanding, we're starting to understand more in terms of, let's call it organic items. We're starting to learn a little bit more in terms of how processed food affects us. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of just how it affects us in general, in terms of overall health. Stuff that we don't necessarily see when we're younger, but the impacts that it actually has on us as we get older. Yeah. And in particular, and let's, you know, to our target audience in particular, it's really more of how does food really impact us when we reach that point where our body starts to change? And so I know for myself, there are certain foods that I just can't consume like I used to. Mm-hmm. It aggravates me and it aggravates my digestive system. So really, I mean, maybe we can kind of start there. What are some of the things that might be going on with an individual in terms of their digestive tract that's causing all this?
Yeah, well, you know, we age. Everything ages. So 40, by the time we're reaching, 45, all those things we were doing in our 20s and our 30s and our early 40s add up. Okay. And so, can we make things better now that we can't eat the things maybe that we were eating when we were younger? And our digestion slows down. And in severe cases, it doesn't just slow down. Maybe we've worn it out and it started to leak. So we've got leaky plumbing in there. It is kind of a way to look at it. It doesn't mean that it's all over though. We can make shifts and changes in the foods that we decide to put on the end of our fork, which can have a huge change in how we're feeling and transitioning in life. And so I look at kind of that 45, 50-ish place where, the dread of being, I can still remember when my mom turned 40, my sister made her a birthday cake. And I remember looking at that birthday cake going, oh, 40, she's so old. Yeah. And now, having passed 40 and heading into, the 50s, I'm like, oh, wait, this is an opportunity. It's a freeing part of where we have the money typically to be able to look and spend it on quality food. It's unfortunate that foods that are grown as they were intended are costing us a little bit more than what we've shifted into the conventional food system. But it doesn't, it's perceived as expensive, but doesn't have to be. We have to step away from the convenience foods and make convenience foods our fruits and vegetables that are growing on the vine or the tree and really make that a big part of our life. And that helps with the healing of the gut to make it stronger and keep it young and vital and improve our longevity.
Sure. And when you talk about processed foods, I think processed food is really amongst us everywhere. Just about anywhere we go, there is some level of processed items. So for an individual who is really trying to be a little bit healthier, are there any particular processed items that are actually not as, or shall we say, convenience foods that are not as good for us in terms of as we do get older, that puts a little bit more pressure on our digestive tract?
Well, I would say probably one of the bigger ones is bread. You know, buying bread at the store, if it really takes time to stop and just read the label and make sure that you're getting yeast in there and wheat and what is in your bread. And so that's what I try to help a lot of people that, okay, maybe you don't need to be off gluten, but maybe you need to know what type of gluten you're having. And so bread is a good example of definitely a convenience food. If you've ever made bread at home, it's a process and it takes a little bit more time. So that would be probably a big one. And then reaching for a protein bar. All the stuff they put in those, some of those protein bars, they're not all created equal. And so it would be reading the label. It's a lot of label read. If you're going to go for the convenience, then you should take the time to know what's in your food. And and we need to read labels, even though they can sometimes be misleading.
And you know, I think, FDA has required the labels to be on just about anything roughly about 10 years ago, was it?
You know, the FDA says Doritos are okay to eat. And when you read a Dorito label, there's a lot of chemicals that go into making those fire Doritos taste good. And that orange coloring that's been added, you know, I think my biggest thing is I try to get people to take responsibility for what they are putting their money into and purchasing and things like that. I mean, the FDA is a regulator and can be really good. However, we all know that Doritos and Twinkies and Cheetos are not good for us. And so how do we best navigate that with the information we're given?
And it's, I think with, especially with the complexity of what food is, how food is made now, simple rule of thumb that I would follow, but don't always follow, is if you don't know what in what the ingredients are, it's probably not that good for you. So recognizing the ingredients is one of the big things. So with that, I mean, it's obvious that I think with the complexity of food in general now, we are seeing a greater disturbance in terms of how it affects our digestive system. So more and more people are suffering from some level of IBS. And they're just noticing that they just don't take in foods, or maybe the foods just don't give them that feeling that it's supposed to give them, you know, that, which is that energetic feeling that, and all that. So with that, what are some subtle signs that individuals should recognize to say, hey, this is a red flag, you know, so whatever I'm eating, it's, I'm feeling this way. What are those red flags that, that individuals should be able to recognize?
You know, it can be something as subtle as like your ears get stuffy, or you just, you ate something and then you feel sluggish and sleepy, maybe even a little bit of brain fog, I mean, so we're talking about the brain, the ears, and then the whole, the gut. It could be anything from getting warm and flush to a distended stomach or that your gut region. Mm-hmm. Digestion, it starts up here and works its way down. And so those foods that we take in can overfill our bucket. And we could have toxic overload within us where it's just seeping out and we're slushing around until it leaves. And so we have a chronically constipated society, actually, and dehydrated. And so when you're, they all play together. Yeah. And those can also be signs of dysregulation in the body. Mm-hmm. There's just so many warning. We get a lot of warning signs. But we don't always want to listen. It's correct. Like when the, you know, service the car light, you need to service the car soon. And the light comes on the dashboard. Sure. I'll get to it. And then the car stops running. That's what happens to us. We just
learn to live with it until it's something completely breaks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and people that deal with digestive issues can be back and forth from the doctor, they say for like 10 years before they figure out what's going on. And it could be just as simple as looking at what you are deciding to put on the end of your fork.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times our natural fix is for an upset stomach is let's go reach for the Pepsi AC or let's go reach for the Rolaids or whatever the case is, but not really taking the time to address what's really causing it.
Yeah.
We're looking for that instant gratification or that instant relief.
Instant gratification, instant relief. I want this done now, but it didn't, you know, when people are finally ready to address it, a lot of times what we have to do is look back at really how long has this been going on? And it's now finally bad enough that you want to address it. So it, in most cases, it didn't just happen overnight.
Sure.
And so making those shifts to correct it are going to take a little bit longer. And we've got to also learn to be kind to ourselves as we go through this process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and you just kind of mentioned it, there's the warning signs are what you have stated are different from the typical warning signs that we would kind of go off of. So we know when it's bad, when we have an upset stomach and we have issues in that line, along those lines, but I would never think to you know, kind of pay attention to what's happening up higher up in terms of ears and all that as well.
Yeah.
Those are definitely some valid points in terms of just kind of paying attention to. But with that, I mean, one of the things that I'm kind of hearing, especially with a lot of women that's going through their premenopausal state or the menopausal state, it looks like these kind of impacts really can wreak some havoc for individuals that are going through those steps.
One of the biggest complaints I get from women in menopause that come in, it's the bloating, it's the poor digestion, it's the irritable bowels, the small intestine. And it when our hormones are shifting around so much, all those things get out of whack. And that's where leaks develop, or we have little villi in our intestines and they start getting cramped together and then things break through. And that can be a big part of the menopausal process.
Sure.
It's a part of life. It's a change. It's a phase. Yeah. And not always one that's really embraced by the community.
We always hear about the negative side of menopause. Like you said, it's a part of the process. It's we can embrace it or we can resist it and fight it. And one of the things in terms of the challenges that I think is that maybe individuals aren't, and this is true for men as well, because men go through their own version of a menopause state. But we're not necessarily preparing ourselves for that transition. And so when that transition comes, it becomes more of a havoc to try to address it and figure things out. So with that said, I mean, what are some things that we can do to prepare ourselves. Because I know that like weight gain or weight loss is a big one. And that's one that we've a lot of people struggle with, men and women, when they go through that stage. And I know that for me, I love spicy food, but I know that my system can't take that spicy foods like it used to.
Yeah.
But I still fight it. I mean, I'm still resisting. So with that, what are some steps that people can really start to kind of think about, whether they're going through it or before? Say, how should they, what are some subtle changes that they can make in terms of their food intake?
Yeah. Okay. There's, wow. You can go big extremes and you can go little with this, but probably the biggest thing is to drink clean filtered water. but when you drink that water, it's to put something in it, whether it be an herbal tea, a pinch of sea salt. I always like lemons or cucumber or even fresh herbs right now, like the basil or the mint. And infusing the water. So the purpose of infusing the water with these fresh fruits and vegetables is that it helps with the clearing. It helps with getting the water in our cells. So we're fluid, we're not all rigid.
Sure.
It helps with the elimination process, because when we're not digesting, absorbing, and eliminating, that's where the backup becomes with the changing hormones. So that's probably my biggest thing, is don't go looking for the sports drink or the add-in. Add your own fresh fruits and vegetables into your water, let it infuse and drink it. And there's a bunch of different infusions that we can do for certain things. For instance, ginger. If you're feeling like you've got an upset stomach, maybe you want to infuse your water with ginger, because that's a calmative to the system. Now, the other thing is to really looking at where the food you're eating is coming from. So if you're going for conventional chicken or conventional cows, you're eating what those animals ate. So if they were on an antibiotic diet in order to get bigger and be stronger and live around amongst all these other animals that they're with in order and avoid disease, then you're taking in what they ate. So it's going for the cleanest animal protein that your body can, or that your budget can afford. And then also looking at, it's not a 20 ounce steak. 3 to 4 ounces is truly a serving size of animal protein, depending on if it's fish or chicken or pork, beef. And so if I tell people, what I like to tell people is, you know, vegetables and things, yes, I would love for you to be able to have them all organic and in season. But if you're going to eat animal protein, then get the best that your budget can afford with the least amount of additional hormones, antibiotics coming in to you, because your body doesn't know how to regulate those coming in. And so that's part of our cleanup process. Of the system. And that can take, depending on where somebody's starting, it can take as much as 60 to 90 days. It can also take up to a year, 2 years to really see big improvements.
Yeah. So really there's no need for a porterhouse steak.
Sorry, all you steak lovers, unless you share it, maybe share it with a friend, because it does taste good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we've got some really good marbling and fat in a porterhouse. You've got both the cuts.
I think we're just used to volume. When your body is getting proper nutrients, you're getting the sufficient amount of nutrients that your body needs in a smaller volume. Then it's something that has less favorable nutrients and might require a little bit more. But of course, there's also
The other thing would be to chew your food. Chew your food. People, we don't spend enough time eating, chewing, and enjoying.
Sure. Now you did mention clean filter water. So what would be considered clean filter water?
Water that's been run through some type of a filter. It could be a filter that you attach to your faucet. It could be one of those things under the counter. It could be the ones that you just buy, I think probably one of the bigger ones that people know is like a Brita or a Hydro. Those will help remove impurities and things that have been added to our water because people think we need them, such as fluoride, chlorine. We don't need, you know, things like that. Don't necessarily make all of us better, stronger, and fitter.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Now, what is your take in regards to water in a plastic bottle? I mean, that is everywhere. That's convenient.
Yeah. If there's anything I would like to see is for us to step away from our water in a plastic bottle. I'd rather you had the faucet water in a glass bottle half the time, or in a stainless steel vessel. The microplastics in our diet are astronomical, and we're seeing more and more people developing autoimmune digestive discomfort. When we look at when we have to go to micro levels of looking at plastic toxicity in the body, and it's not just the water bottles, it's the plastic lid that we put on our to-go coffee. When you think about that heat hitting that lid and then you're sipping through it, you're taking in all those carcinogens that are in that lid. So that's just, it's not a way, it causes buildup. It fills us up because the liver, which is one of our biggest detoxifying organs, can't process it. So it starts to get a backup in there. And then that's where we can't, even when we're eating good food, can't digest it.
Sure. So, and when we've gone 3 years, I mean, it's obvious that some of us have gone through many years of just maybe a less than favorable, let's call it a diet or a nutritional intake. So would there need to be a level of detoxing and cleansing of the system? Would that be recommended, or can someone just make subtle changes to in terms of the improvements of their eating to allow for things to shall we say, get better?
Yeah. You know, you can do it with food, just cleaning up the food supply that you're taking in. You don't have to do the whole detox or cleanse thing. Not everybody can wrap their brains around that. And so if you can just even take baby steps of cleaning up the diet, I'm going to drink water first thing in the morning, 8 to 12 ounces. And that's where I'm going to start. That's where I can start. And then after I get that mastered, maybe I add in something else. Now this week, I'm going to continue to drink my water, but I'm going to eat 3 pieces of fresh fruit today and get that into your diet and figure out how that's going to work and master that. And then I'm going to try new vegetables. And so how do I get more of those in my diet? I would really love if we could get everybody to eat a more plant forward diet. So eating the vegetables, getting the grains in, and then having the coup de grace or the big treat be that if you're going to do animal protein, then have your fish, have your chicken, and have your beef and enjoy it in just a little lesser quantity, because that helps while you're eating these by having an array of vegetables in there and some grains and things. You're helping everything work together. The basics are rice and beans make a complete protein, and they have the complete amino acid profile in it. And we know we don't have to eat beans and rice at the same time or in the same meal, but we know that we're getting good protein in.
Sure.
And the same thing can go with when we're taking in our animal protein as well.
And I think that's definitely very helpful information. And one of the things that, you know, I think for many of us is we do not necessarily, maybe more so now than before, but many people have a hard time putting their vegetables or the greens and all that first. meat and potatoes, you know, or we're known to be more meat and, well, some of us are known to be more meat and potatoes. So when you're talking about greens, I was always taught the darker the color, the better. Is it the darker green it is better?
Dark greens definitely have really good nutrition in them and definitely a deeper array of vitamins and minerals than, let's say, maybe your heavier water, lighter colored, like iceberg lettuce, for that instance. However, a green cabbage, which is usually lighter in color, is very good for us and feeds our digestive. And so cabbage can be an excellent gut healer. So from the juice and having like raw sauerkraut that's made with cabbage, that can be a very big stimulator of the gut. And it only takes a little bit to do that.
Now, if we're choosing, it's obvious that if we're choosing vegetables, I think definitely leafy greens are definitely good for us. But some of us have a tendency to migrate towards items like squash and zucchini. And so how does that compare? So you hear about leafy greens. Everyone talks about leafy greens.
Oh, yeah.
So what about some of the other types of vegetables that are out there?
Oh, gosh, everything. I mean, right now, if you go to the farmer's market right now, it's just bursting with the bounty of our seasons that we're in. We're right in that transition time where you're still seeing some beautiful blackberries and there's still strawberries out there. But then you're also seeing some of the seasonal fruits, other fruits come in, like the melons and the grapes. So from a fruit perspective, and then you go through the vegetables and the carrots are bursting right now. Celery's in, all your rainbow chards, your spinach, all those dark greens. And then you come around and the zucchinis, the cucumbers, the root vegetables. Now we'll start seeing more of those, and they're not all bad for us. We could do a sweet potato or a little goat. We can roast potatoes up. It can be a good starch. Some of the corn that's coming out right now is looking really good. The bounty is there. I'd go for all of those artichokes. We're very lucky here in California in particular that we just have such a plethora of variety of vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, eat those cruciferouses.
and when anybody is, as we go through aging, you mentioned, you know, just our body has been at it for so many years at that point. Is there other than the fact that the nutrients or the shall we say the ingredients that are put into a particular product, I would imagine that the healthier items, your body has a greater ability to digest that with greater ease than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, our bodies are made to digest fruits, vegetables. That's where they like our caveman, like our ancestors, did. The body is not necessarily made to process red dye 40 or yellow and green, and then all these other chemicals that we add in to make a item shelf stable. And there's I say quite often that those center aisles, if you're going to a conventional grocery store,
sure,
you want to avoid those as much as possible because most of those items have a longer shelf life than we do. And so when something's got a longer shelf life than I'm supposed to potentially have, that's a little disconcerting what's making it stick together. I had a nutritionist friend who used to keep an Oreo on their desk and then would change the date every day, and the Oreo never changed.
Oh, wow.
So if you look at that it didn't grow mold, makes me think.
I agree. Now you talk about conventional grocery stores. How does Whole Foods play into that? Because it's obvious that the concept of Whole Foods, it's more sought after because it's known to have more favorable items, but they do have their center aisles as well with a bunch of items.
Whole Foods did a great job when it was first founded and brought, I think, a great awareness to the clean food movement, is where I would give it. I've seen a lot of changes in Whole Foods over the last few years. And my suggestion is it's not, Safeway, Raley's, Nob Hill, Trader Joe's, they all have good stuff and they all have bad stuff. They're offering a convenience to the marketplace.
Sure.
And so probably, and there was an article, and it's been over 4 years ago now, but Costco was a huge driver of the organic food movement. And they do have, if you're going to eat in bulk, or you have a large family to feed, can be a reliable source for clean Whole Foods, where you can grab them. Of course, Whole Foods has coined that name. And when you say it now, everybody thinks of a grocery store.
Sure.
But Whole Foods are what we grow in our gardens and pick up that has not been macerated by a machine to be something else.
So it would be true for no matter where you would be doing your grocery shopping.
Lenardi's, go to local grocers, but you've got to do your due diligence. You got to look at the produce. You got to figure out which one, you want to get. Probably great resources. The Environmental Working Group puts out the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So okay. Things that you should always buy, seasonal, organic, and things that you can probably don't necessarily have to buy organic. You can go with the conventional. It's still going to have really good nutrients in it. And so I think that that's a good resource for a lot of people that are just starting out.
Sure.
And the other thing is just avoid the center as much as possible. But we do need to step in there from time to time, especially if you're cooking. That's where you're going to get your breads or your flour to bake, mm-hmm. and your grains are going to be there. So not every center aisle is bad.
So just really it's choosing items that are more in their, shall we say, natural state.
Yeah.
As opposed to create it into something different.
Something, yeah. Let you get to be the creator.
Mm-hmm.
Play in the kitchen.
Yeah. And for all of those who actually enjoy cooking, this is, that's ideal for the ones.
Yeah. For those that don't enjoy cooking or don't have a lot of pleasure in that, don't find a lot of great pleasure in it, they eat for just because they need to. Then there are some things that we can work with. Maybe you batch cook and have things frozen that you can eat. There's a lot of different things so that we can minimize that discomfort of the kitchen.
Sure.
I like to try to help people make friends with their kitchen, whether you're going to be best friends or just get along. There's some boundaries that we can draw there.
Of course. And when you're talking about, it's obvious we're talking about healthy natural foods or foods that's going to really benefit us in terms of everything. And when we're talking about just general like energy level, I think we all understand, we all recognize that food has an impact in terms of our energy level. Now with that, it's obvious that food itself has other impacts on us as well. From a health standpoint, especially as we are going through some hormonal changes and that sort. So what are some of the, I'll make this more of a two-part question. What are some of the trigger foods that could really impact us in a negative manner? And then what are some key items? What are some key foods that we should be consuming because we really need it as we do get older?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Apples are coming. Apples are a really good food for us to eat. I'm picking apples right now because they're coming into season, but eating the whole apple, getting the skin in there, that pectin. There's a study recent said there was a saying, apple a day keeps the doctor away. My mom used to always say that to us. Yeah. And actually, there was a recent study done that eating 1 to 2 apples a day does tend to keep a person's immune system more robust. And especially now, because apples come into season as we're shifting from summer and heading into fall. So we're warm to cooler. Apples can be a really good food to add during this time to keep that immune system robust as we transition. Other just easy grab and go foods, bananas oftentimes get a bad rap because they're considered sugary, but our bodies know how to process that sugar and they're loaded with potassium and fiber. And so if you eat a greener banana, and it's a prebiotic food too, and we're hearing more about that. So it's good for keeping that mitochondria balanced. Mm-hmm. So I would tell people eat a banana and an apple every day. Now there are other things that we can do. reducing our sugar intake, and alcohol is a hidden sugar for many because they don't, I don't eat sugar anymore. And they're standing there with a glass of wine and I'm like, sure. Do you realize there's a lot of sugar in this?
Yeah.
I get to be the bubble buster, but I'm not saying that, you know, there's no place for that in the diet, but a reduction would be good for most people because it's a hormone dysregulator. That's a lot of times women are like, oh, I get hot flashes or I get red flush face. And a lot of times that can come from our wine that we enjoy. So it's reducing those sulfurs that are maybe in the diet. They've come from processed foods as well as something that we consider natural.
Sure.
Fermented. Maca root is something I use quite a bit as an add-in. It's a root that's been freeze-dried and made into a powder, but it's very nice for both men and women for energy and mood stabilization. So, you know, hormones make us kind of do this up and down, and where maca root can come in and just help stabilize. And a teaspoon a day for a 7 to 14 day period, depending on how much fatigue somebody might have or hormone dysregulation, just added to their water can make big changes that help them stay on track to make good choices with the food. Eating something that's been grown and not already chopped up and turned into something else is really the easiest route to follow.
Yeah. And are there any foods that we think is actually good for us that could be, that could cause a little bit of trigger or discomfort?
Well, too much of a good thing, okay. For anybody. So, you know, eating too many carrots can turn people's skin orange. You're overwhelmed.
Oh, that is true. It does happen. Yes,
it's true. Too much broccoli is not necessarily good. Maybe we need broccoli in a younger form. So maybe you've been eating broccoli or cauliflower, both of those, one may trigger somebody and the other one. So cauliflowers for some people is very hard to digest. So maybe it needs to be a smaller portion and you need to eat other cruciferous vegetables. So, because it's not just kale, we've got kale, we've got Brussels sprouts, we've got cabbage, we've got broccoli. These all fall into this group, this family of that we need to be taking in those plant fibers. And so it's finding what works for one and maybe not another. Sure. Pomegranates are coming in and they're a great food for the heart and the liver, that red, is a good cleaner. How much do we need though? You know, so sure. It's finding a good balance for everybody. And it's a lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would imagine that all of our bodies are unique in its own way. So one effect on one person or an effect on one person would be different than its effect on somebody else.
Yes.
And we hear about some of the more common items, such as like dairy products. We all, as we get older, we're having a much more challenging time with the lactose.
Yeah.
But dairy, is that really bad for when we get older?
For some, it is not good. They can't, you know, our digestion breaks down. We lose some of that gut integrity to break it down. It could be the lactose, so the sugars that are in there that naturally occurring, that just maybe the body is like, ooh, something's going on here. Milk in particular, you know, cow's milk, are we really meant to drink? That gets into a whole nother debate on, are we meant to have cow's milk in our diets as humans as much as we do? Goat and sheep dairy are starting to become very more mainstream for a lot of people and can be easier to digest on the system. So it's really working with those triggers that can cause inflammation. That's a big one. Inflammation from dairy seems to be really big. And then what we're also seeing is that a lot of people that maybe develop wheat intolerances or gluten intolerances, and they cut that out of their diet, because those are prebiotic foods, over a period of time, anywhere from 2 to 3 years, up to 6 years, we see those people that have had it removed that may then develop a intolerance to dairy afterwards, because we don't continue to rebuild and have all the gut microbes that we need to digest, absorb, and assimilate those foods. And so our biggest allergens that we see are gluten, dairy, eggs come in there. Sugar, the list goes on, yeah. But those are the biggies. And those are the ones we've probably made the dirtiest. And so we've got toxic backup in us.
Yeah. And it's, just from the conversation here in this brief conversation, the complexity in terms of just understanding what's going to work, what's not going to work. There's definitely a high complexity when it comes to food. It's not just eating food in general. I think one of the things that maybe we can kind of touch on is if someone's looking to make a change, someone's looking to make improvements, there are subtle signs that we recognize, as you mentioned, that our body's telling us, all right, this is not good for us. It's obvious that if we're looking to make any type of health improvements, whether it's weight loss, whether it's weight gain, whether it's increasing strength, or trying to reduce inflammation or improve on brain fog, if we're not seeing improvements in terms of what we're doing and we're exercising, then one of the things that maybe we should all look at is our nutritional habits and what's going on there and trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Am I correct in regards to kind of addressing that and saying that as well?
Yes. Yeah. I totally agree. we can work out all we want. And that's great. I mean, I believe everybody should be lifting weights and getting some cardio in and stretching, and moving, not sitting as much as we do. And that will make the food that we're eating work better as well. So it can be a beautiful package of balance. And so we can create balance, but yeah, we need to look again, what's on our plate? What are we putting on the end of our fork? And probably one of the other things is to pick one meal and make that your shift meal. And the other two, eat like you normally do, and master one. So if it's breakfast for someone or lunch, those usually seem to be the two that most people decide with, because they savor that dinner meal. It's usually a very good family or social routine for them. So they're not ready to mess with that. So we usually start with maybe one of these that it's a little more, they can have a little more success with or even control. And it could be just, hey, I'm going to make my own breakfast this morning, and it's not going to be a box of cereal with milk on it. I'm going to take a couple of eggs and I'm going to saute some vegetables and have some vegetables with my eggs. And maybe I do have a piece of toast with it, with some real butter on it. Some peanut butter even, and really making that a protein rich, but you have made it, you know where your foods come from, and then you can go about your day. And then the next one we'll ease into is we'll pack our own lunch when we go back to the office, or have it ready when we leave our space, and then just make these changes slowly. I mean, we didn't get here overnight. So the changes are going to take time.
Absolutely. And it's like anything else. There is oftentimes when we're looking at more of a quick fix, that quick fix is not sustainable. So we want to make sure that whatever the changes that we're making is sustainable, so we can keep that going and allow for a much healthier habit to come.
Yeah. And it's a habit. It's making it a habit.
Yeah, I agree. So Stephanie, if anyone wants to talk further in terms of where they are with nutrition and some of the struggles that they might be going through, where can they find you?
GotYourHealthGotItAll.com is my website, and you can check it out. You can reach out to me there. I do have an office in Los Gatos, and you're more than welcome to give me a call. It's 408-499-2766. Email me is S with that last name, Figuera, @Yahoo. Best place is go through the website, GotYourHealthGotItAll, phone numbers and emails are right there. You can just reach out and I'd be happy to talk to you. I offer 30 minutes of just kind of getting to know and talking about food to people all the time. And I'm happy to do that.
Well, I appreciate you jumping on and sharing a little bit of your wisdom in terms of all this information for everybody out there. You know, just as important as exercise and everything, your food is one of the keys in terms of maintaining prolonged health. Especially if you're talking about any challenges or any struggles that you're going through, whether you're going through a hormonal change or if you're going through any issues in terms of digestive tract with the IBS or anything like that. So get a handle on that. That will definitely ensure that you feel better. And having more nutritious foods is going to go a very long way to kind of go with that. So Stephanie, I appreciate your time once again. And I thank everybody for joining us for this episode of Get Minted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.